Welcome to the Sedona Soul Sister Show, down-to-earth discussions on spiritual, metaphysical, paranormal, and healing topics. The Sedona Soul Sisters are the most trusted psychic mediums in Sedona. They have offices in Sedona, Arizona, where they see clients from all over the world. And now, today's show. Welcome to the Sedona Soul Sister Show, down-to-earth discussions on spirituality, metaphysics, paranormal, and healing topics. The Sedona Soul Sisters are the most trusted psychic mediums, healers, and galactic practitioners in Sedona, Arizona. We are Rosalyn Reynolds, myself, Ivory Lanoue, Terry Ann Russell, Robert Markham, Anya Sophia, and Michael. We have offices in Sedona, Arizona, where we see clients from all over the world. Today's topic is yoga for greater self and God realization. Robert, tell us a little bit about this.
So yoga is a vast subject, and it's a very, very old subject. And it is can be a great tool for finding peace, and maybe, you know, with individuals that might listen to this show, they perhaps, a lot of them would consider themselves empathic. And I think as far as it pertains to this audience or anybody that feels that they're empathic, yoga can be a great tool for perhaps sometimes creating distance between oneself and all of those energies that they feel like they're picking up on. And in this way, yoga can give greater freedom and to an empath in terms of managing all of these things and these perceptions. And can aid with a greater perceptual clarity for an empath. And so what I wanted to, first I wanted to say is that I am not a scholar of yoga. I'm not a scholar on the history of yoga. I am but a novice compared to the masters of yoga. The masters that have spent many years and perhaps lifetimes studying and perfecting the science of yoga, the science of God realization, which could actually entail years and years of meditation in a retreat up in the high Himalayas or something as, you know, absolutely crazy as that. So what I wanted to do was just talk about kind of yoga in the big picture. And there's a philosophical side of yoga, and there's sort of a more physical side of yoga. And we can talk about why those exist and how they merge and come together. And then maybe talk about ways in which individuals practice yoga in order to achieve some of these rewards or promises that have been talked about and taught by people for literally thousands and thousands of years. And the neat thing here is that yoga is considered as a science by many, and it meaning that it's you can reproduce the results, right? This is something that is a step-by-step thing that, if you do it, it's well documented what you will return, what you will get in return. And, this science of yoga seems to, it's so all encompassing in that it bridges together your physical existence, your mental existence, your emotional awareness, your knowledge of the spirit of your soul, and bridging that with, because yoga means union or to yoke ultimately, and bridging all of these things together and combining them to achieve an alignment with what one might consider the best and highest good, right? Reality, things as they are, the highest intention, right? And with this journey, the rewards one receives is a more joyful and peaceful existence. And so I don't want to, it will be easy for me to talk for hours about this, and I don't want to dominate this discussion with a diatribe. So anybody that wants to say anything about this between the five of us here, just interrupt me and let's do it. And we can talk about our own experiences with yoga as well. Does that sound good to you guys?
Yeah, just put your hand up or use the raise the hand feature so we know you have something you want to add. I'll put my hand up because I want to add something. When I first started doing yoga, I was working in the field of mental health in a psychiatric hospital and with seriously mentally ill population. And it was very intense work and they were very short staffed all the time. And it was with low-income homeless people. It was very stressful work. And somebody suggested to me that I do yoga. And I went to a lady's house in Prescott for years. It was just down in her basement. She could fit 14 people down there, but it always really relieved a lot of stress for me. But I have to say, as an empath, I am very much an empath. Like, I never really thought about that being helpful for an empath. That's a really good tool to know because a lot of my clients are also empaths trying to draw some boundaries around it, learn to live with it, and then use it, like harness it as the gift it is to use in whatever way feels right to them. So anything that's going to help with that, I'm all for it. Though I can't do yoga anymore because of shoulder injuries, I miss that very much. You know, let's hear about your experiences, Anya and Michael.
Greetings, everybody. Hi. you know, what I find interesting is that yoga is more than body movement.
One thing that ties yoga in is breath and also your hand gestures, right? So, Robert, you know, when you're doing something like this or like this, right? What do we call these, Robert?
A mudra.
A mudra, right? And so naturally, we find that our hands sometimes will naturally do mudras on their own. And the body is basically connected to the earth and to the cosmos. It's an antenna. And so when you're doing different mudras, whether you're aware of what you're doing or you're not, you don't have to be consciously aware. You can channel in energies from the higher realms. It's interesting, as we were talking right now, I was actually naturally doing this mudra. I don't know if we could see it right there, but my hands went into this one in front of my lap, right? Let's see if I could do it right there so you can see it. So I don't know exactly unless I tune inside to see what that mudra exactly means, but you can study them and find out what they mean and do the ones that are best for you. So it isn't always about, doing the downward dog, which is incredible, right? You know, or big body movements, but it's also about being in tune with your breath. And you can also do mudras to bring in the energy and bring in the knowledge and the wisdom and to connect yourself on all of your bodies, meaning etheric, astral, physical, all of that coming in and balancing your chakras.
Yeah, definitely.
Can't hear you, Michael.
No. For myself, doing yoga years ago, about 30 years ago, I started doing it. And it was more so for a form of just stretching and relaxing and limbering up my body. And I found after doing it through a couple of years, you know, it was a beautiful routine to incorporate into my life for relaxation, for time out, quieting the mind in that sense. Because again, when we're in that state of quietness, this is when we get out of our mind, we can allow things to open up or unfold for us, which is what I've been finding greatly with simply getting out of one's mind, getting out of my mind, and not being caught up in the whirlwind of how to, have to, need to, ought to, should, coulda, woulda. It's just learning to become present, being in the here and now.
Yeah, what's interesting about yoga is he was saying about getting out of your mind. It takes you into the presence of your body and your breath, which gets you out of your mind. Because, you know, on a day-to-day basis, you know, you get up, you shower, you go to work, and you eat, and you're hanging out with people, and all the mind is focused so much on going outward into the world and whatever you're experiencing with sports, work, people, family, friends. It's all this outward experience, except for when you take a shower, usually, for people who are just have a normal, what they call normal life right now, right? They might go to the gym and work out, which I think is also really good. But yoga has a way of tuning you into your breath and into your body. There's a bit different than working out. And even when people are working out, lots of times they're reading a book or they're looking at something on the TV, or they've got the music going. And so their mind is still going out there instead of going inward. So yoga really has a beautiful way of getting you out of your mind and into your body and into your breath. And it brings balance into your life, because it's great to be going outward, but we've also got to take time to go inward. And so many people find it hard to sit and meditate. They're like, how do I just sit and meditate? So yoga is a great way to bring movement into meditation as well. So you can be moving your body and be going inward into a meditative state as well. Like you said, Robert, there's just like so many different aspects about yoga, why it's so all encompassing and so, and can be so great for people on many different levels.
Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah. Like all of that stuff. I came thinking, so what is the gift of yoga, right? All of these things you just said, which I think all of us here are familiar with those. And I think, yoga is to become as clear as you possibly can. It's essentially, it's a practice of purification of the mind and the body. And it's like the steps of how to get there. It depends on where one is in their path, learning to be mindful with the breath. Yoga is essentially the science of removing resistance, removing anything keeping you from having clarity of reality, to having realization of the self, if you will. So the gift of yoga is you no longer have to carry the burden of your attachments and repressed emotions. That's the promise. And a perfected yogi has transcended the swings of pleasure and pain. They no longer experience suffering because they have removed their identification with the body, with the mind, with the emotions. And they're at a point where they say, I am not these things. I have gone deep enough. I've gone deep enough to find that I am simply the light of consciousness. And there's a deep bliss in that state. And so Michael and Anya and Ivory, I mean, all three of you mirrored what was something I've experienced and or had in my experiences, which is like, it seems like yoga seems to be about relaxation. It seems about relaxation. And I think about, and because, you know, it has so much to do with the breath and so on and so forth. But what happens when you're relaxed? I feel like when I'm relaxed, I'm not distracted. And then if I'm not distracted, I feel like I have greater clarity. And it seems like perhaps in my experience, I can become attached to certain things that occurred, and I have an emotional response to that. In the worst case, it was a trauma and a significant trigger that brought me into a fight or flight state. And yoga has been identified, hatha yoga, the yoga of removing resistance in the body through putting oneself in various postures and positions and learning to relax in that position, has been great for helping individuals with heal from trauma, because the individual will go into this state where there is, go into this position either mentally or emotionally or physically, and then they will learn to relax in that position. And so it's like, let's say I was terrified of talking to women, right? Like every time I talk to a woman, I just get freaked out and I can't think. And I'm like, gosh, why am I such an idiot? Well, if I can learn to, if I can have the courage to get into that position and then learn how to relax in that position, all of a sudden it's like, things just flow forth. I can be me. I can be who I really am. I'm not distracted by something else. And so I would say almost yoga allows us to gain freedom from the past in this way too. And I just wanted to share that. Before I go on, did anybody else want to take another stab at this?
Hi, no? Roz.
Hey, Roz.
Hi. My adventures with Zoom. Trying to get on.
Okay. I wrote some notes here and I just want to roll with this and talk about them. And I'll just look for people's hands up or just interrupt me. And we can just feed off this together if that works for you guys. And if you guys feel a different perspective on it, let's talk about it. Find the truth. You know, yoga is ultimately the science of alignment of your mind, body, and energy with reality, with the highest and purest of intentions. It is a science of removing resistance to all-encompassing peace, resistance to light. Yoga can be interpreted from Sanskrit into English to mean union or to yoke. The state of union or yoga that is sought after is the union of your mind with God's mind. You can imagine you would become quite wise and infallible if you attained this state of union. In my opinion, yoga is ultimately a set of practices and directions for meditation and for achieving the requisite relaxation to renounce attachments of the attention to the three-dimensional world of form, so that one's consciousness merges back into a state of pure beingness, undistracted by the need to act or have an emotionalized stance on something. One gains freedom from compulsive desire and emotionalized positions that we have taken in the past that have made mental impressions on what we believe and we think. The trick here is relaxation. As one relaxes the body and mind and purifies their intentions, greater spiritual awareness unfolds and the reality evolves closer to truth. Yoga is simply about removing distractions from the inherent joy of existence. Physical, mental, and emotional distractions from joy all dissolve as one matures down the path to enlightenment or self-realization. Yoga is not a process of getting anything. It is the process of letting go of what is blocking access to what you already have, what is already in you. It is about undoing your identification with the body, the mind, and emotions. This notion of self-realization is the notion of becoming aware of your source of awareness. And it could be said that this awareness is the greatest bliss a human can experience. And once you touch it, you will not stop until you become it, until you attain union with it. Perhaps awareness of this source is yourself, your personality, your little self, your ego, realizing that it is part of a greater self. There is no longer me in that person. Eventually, you begin to identify as all persons. If one can let go of these attachments to opinions and positionalities that make up the self-identity and instead choose at any given moment to identify with the inner guidance of the self, one is realizing the self. You've heard of self-realization, right? It's an unfolding from within you after you have removed resistance to its unfoldment, after you have removed distractions from your environment, from your perception. In Christianity, this might be considered the Holy Spirit. That the Holy Spirit could be considered that which is drawing you towards perfect peace, your ultimate destiny. It speaks to you all through the day as your conscience. And in Buddhism, it could be likened to the Buddha nature. So from a religious perspective, yoga is a common thread between Hinduism and Buddhism, but it is not beholden to either of them. Yoga is not a religious thing. But it is something that many individuals that have committed themselves to religious paths wholeheartedly have adopted into their lifestyle and way of being because it's so effective for increasing their spiritual attainment within that religious tradition. But yoga is not beholden to any religious tradition. It has just been found to be particularly useful within any religion. Yoga is essentially a meditation practice for achieving a liberated state of consciousness. But one thing I can think we can say about yoga is regardless of caste or religion, yoga encourages discovering something deeper and marvelous within yourself. Yoga would say the only way out is in. Yoga would say that God is both immanent and transcendent. The kingdom of heaven is within you and without you. But you must make this journey to this revelation of your own desire. So what would we do? What do we do? One could look at yoga as having a philosophical side and a physical side. a mind purifying side and a body purifying side. What does this purification mean? It means this, the removal of distraction. If I can, if my body is healthy and comfortable in any position, I'm very flexible. I can go with the flow. I can sit in this chair for days and not become uncomfortable, right? Same thing with my mind. What, wherever the discomfort is the resistance. You know, as one becomes more clear through removing any of these distractions, decisions of greater quality with greater awareness of the context of your life and what's going on may come from attaining a calm state of mind, body, and emotions. So yoga is a technology. When you think about it like a technology, for attaining and sustaining composure and calm. Highly realized beings, enlightened beings, they do not worry. They do not cause drama. They are not frantic. They are in yoga. They are in alignment. There's nothing to worry about because all is as it should be. In this state of acceptance that they have achieved, they don't have the desire to change anything. They have let go of their opinions of what should be or should not be. One might think that in this state, it's a weak state. You're vulnerable. On the contrary, you become invulnerable. You receive great clarity of mind because you are no longer in the past. You have removed distractions. And so to do this, one has to learn to quiet the mind and create distance from their mind and their emotions. And when one does this, they realize that they are not the mind. And that actually a lot of thoughts just arise on their own. But we become identified with these thoughts. We become addicted to the drama of the mind, the source of suffering. You could say that your mind is one giant soap opera, deciding what should or shouldn't be at any given point. But when you do find this relaxation in the ways that everybody here has talked about, you realize that a lot of it doesn't matter. And you actually stop caring about it. And then from this, a natural joy and peace arises. The presence of God. And as you discover these things, you become more identified with that. Like in this way, you could say, don't worry about getting rid of negative habits or negative things in your life. Instead, focus on cultivating the positive habits. Because as you experience and realize the joy and peace of those positive things, the negative things will be de-energized and they will fall away naturally, like a child deciding it doesn't want to play with the toy anymore. So yoga is powerful. Just beginning a practice of yoga and thinking, what is yoga? And doing what everybody else has done here and learn to become one with the breath, to be mindful. That will teach you what is going on in your body. And you won't become afraid of these different states that you experience. You know, as you do this, the negative in your life will slowly lose power. It will just be de-energized. And so in yoga, there's these physical and emotional mental parallels that exist. So say if I'm in yoga and someone says, like Anya said, to go into downward dog, right? And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so uncomfortable. I'm like looking around at everybody. And downward dog is a posture and a typical yoga practice you find in the West. Mm-hmm. It's so uncomfortable. That's information. Because in hatha yoga, where it's uncomfortable is where the block is. And so, and the physical component of yoga is about opening up energy pathways in your body. Mm-hmm. Wherever it's uncomfortable in your body, there is a block to the flow of energy, of vital force. You could say that it's almost like there's aspects of your body physically that are paralyzed. You don't have access to them. And anytime you experience discomfort in this life, emotionally, physically, mentally, there's a block there. There doesn't have to be a block there. And as you remove these blocks through your own effort, life becomes easy. You become very efficient. Things don't bother you. And perhaps in a very high sense, you become to exist in a state of forgiveness. Because in yoga, there are no grievances. There are no grievances. Because one in yoga realizes that their happiness and their forgiveness are one. And they seek out blocks to this forgiveness so that they can experience happiness. And so in a relationship with another human, say your significant other, where there is discomfort, there is a block. What is there a block of? Communication, love. So there are these physical, and where there is not peace, there is not yoga. There is not union with God. And so in one's life physically or emotionally, where there's discomfort, there is a block. One can seek out yoga teachers to help them get rid of the physical blocks. And there's a variety of these teachers out there. And one can seek out more comprehensive yoga teachers that understand the emotional side to it as well, as they seek to become a perfected being. So here's a neat analogy. When you become more physically flexible and you remove distractions from the physical body, so you are no longer beholden to the limitations of your physical body, you can sit comfortably for a long period of time in meditation, perhaps. When you become more physically flexible, as the energy pathways open up and the body opens up, you begin to fall into postures. You begin to fall into downward dog. You don't have to settle into it as you break through all this like crystallized fascia and muscle, the lack of energy flowing. You begin to fall into it. Now, in the same way, when you become more mentally flexible, you release your identifications with your opinions, with your likes and dislikes, with that person is not like me. When you release that, you become more flexible. The energy flows, the love flows, right? So when you do that, the heart opens up. And as the heart opens up, you fall into compassion. When the body opens up, you can fall into a forward bend. There is no resistance. When the heart opens up, you fall into compassion. It is effortless. There is no resistance to it. In fact, you desire to spend more time in that position, because it's easy to be in it. So, the heart opens up because it feels safe. The body opens up because it feels safe. My body will not allow me to go into a certain position if it doesn't feel safe in that position. That's the way conventional science has proven this time and time again. And for this reason, moving on to Hatha Yoga, which is it focuses on essentially purifying the body and purifying the mind through pranayama, which is focusing on the breath, to control the breath. If you can control your breath, you can control whether you're in a relaxed and restorative mode, or you can. I just saw a hand go up. So Michael and Anya, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to add a little bit already to what you're saying in perspective of a lot of people who have a very difficult time with meditation and getting in touch with their breath. I agree with everything you're saying so far. So I'm just adding to it, saying that to me, yoga is kind of like, for those who struggle with getting out of their mind, it's like the easy way to meditation. It's the easy way. It's meditation with movement. In my journey, I did one of those 10-day silent retreats, which is just meditation. It is not yoga. And I wasn't doing any yoga or any body movement when I went and did it. So I sat still every day for 10 days without speaking, straight into meditation. And that's just breath and not moving your body, which can be extremely challenging. But once I got through those 10 days, it was extremely rewarding, because the breath and just feeling my body just sit there and move through and relax into that position and releasing blockages was extremely rewarding at the end of the 10-day silent retreat I did. But again, at that time in my life, I was doing a lot of work. I was just working all the time, and I wasn't doing any kind of yoga, any body movement at all. And so I just say from experience that those that have a hard time with meditation and getting out of the mind and go, well, I just can't fathom how someone can just sit there and just relax. yoga will take you there. Yoga will get you there because, as you were just saying about moving the body into these uncomfortable positions at first, then they become comfortable and you're releasing these blockages through movement. And then you get to a place as you keep going on with this peaceful part of your mind where you can just relax into meditation, sitting or in the downward dog position, whatever position you're going to be in. So I think for those that, like I said, have a challenge with slowing the mind, just can't sit still. It is definitely beneficial to do the yoga pathway to start somewhere. And it's a great place to start. It's also a great place to finish too, right? Because you can go the other direction. It's just, the body's just so all encompassing with it. That's about, do you have anything to say to that?
Just make sure you hear me okay. I had an interesting experience about 15 years ago as well, doing a silent retreat for 5 days. And it was a meditation. We did holistic foods and no talking with each other. And we were told to continue asking the question in the meditative state, who am I? And then we were to answer that. I am love. I am bliss. I am joy. I'm human. And over and over and over again. And then we'd take breaks. We'd go for silent walks on the ground just to get grounded. And after the third day of doing this meditation, it just kind of took me out of the mind. And I had what you would call a kundalini activation. And the energies rose right up through from the root chakra, right on up and beyond, where you went into a state of bliss where you're one with the universe, one with the cosmos. And it's quite an interesting place to be and very peaceful, very gentle, very loving and kind. And for me, that was probably the only time I've ever did such an intense meditative journey for myself. And finding that activation really took me to another level in my process of self-realization on planet Earth.
Yeah, it's interesting you say it took you to a state of bliss. For me, that 10 days that I did, that was just solely focusing on your breath. There was no mantras or affirmations. It was strictly breath. And just breathe, focus on your breath for 10 days. Brought up a lot of lower energies in me, fears and pains and psychedelic experiences that were really uncomfortable. And I got through them just through the breath. And when I came out into the regular world after 10 days of that, my whole world outside of me completely shifted and changed for the better, completely for the better. I just walked out into a whole new reality after that 10 days, but the inside reality of me had shifted. And again, these are extremes we're talking about. Mark and I don't know why we're bringing it up, but the point is that yoga to me, I think is just, it's a great way to get into releasing things one chunk at a time, one movement at a time, letting go of the attachments that we have to this reality and bringing peace into your whole existence, into your body feeling good, into your headspace feeling good, and your heart feeling good. Most definitely.
Yeah, something we didn't touch on is how, you just did, but to add to it is that the emotions in the mind are not separate. That's the right way to say this. I'd rather say the emotions in the body are not very separate at all, because there's a book called The Body Keeps the Score, and it's about how so much of our particularly negative emotions are stored in our body. And yoga is almost like a way of wringing out the,
yeah,
you know what I mean? And it's neat. And it's also, I've been studying Hatha yoga to really figure out like what's going on here. There's all these asanas, these postures, but like what's the core? Without what could you, if you didn't have this, would you not be able to accomplish what Hatha yoga is trying to do? And to me, it has a lot to do with the spine. It has to do with alignment and health of the spine. So when I think about my preparation for becoming older, assuming I live beyond tomorrow, I think like spine health is a very important thing to me. And the Hatha yogis call the spine the axis of the universe. I'm sure we could get into why that is, but the idea is, I think by having a healthy spine, you have a healthy nervous system. And let's say mentally, I'm very unconfident. I'm somebody that is closed off, if you will. And you can see that. You can see the protective body language that I carry around with me. I feel vulnerable. I feel like I need to be in a fight or flight state in order to protect something. And in this way, I could be stuck in the past, and my body's stuck in the past too. And so I might go to a Hatha yoga class, which to the audience, that's essentially every yoga studio you could find in the US is Hatha yoga. It's the putting yourself in different postures and stretching or whatever, opening up the body. And so if, say I had a young guy, a 16-year-old kid, and I could tell, man, he's wounded, you know, he's not very confident. Some people have somehow locked his mind into this fearful state, whatever. I don't know what the scenario would be, but I say, okay, come over here and let's do some yoga. He decides to do it. When I put him in these postures that are gestures of confidence, right? I say, okay, man, let's put our shoulders back. Let's open our arms wide open. And I'm standing in front of him, right? And whatever it is. And then we're moving around and we're putting ourselves in these vulnerable positions, right? Like, you know, like a horse, it's very rare for a horse to lay down on its side around humans because horses are prey animals and they're looking out for predators. But when a horse does that, it's a gesture of peace. It shows that they see you as a loving being. It'd be in the same way. I'm asking this kid, this 16-year-old to get in these positions around me. And so it's almost like you can go through the back door of the mind, right? A confident mindset shows a confident posture, right? Well, if I can't get his mind to change, I can change his body first. And then it will trick his mind into thinking he's confident almost. And it's like unlocking those things. Sorry, I don't know how I got that from what you said, Anya, but this is where we're at.
Well, in relationship to what you're saying too, one technique that I've taught a lot of my clients is breathing in the spine. Instead of breathing into your lungs, you visualize breathing in from the top of your spine. And as you breathe in, the energy goes down to the bottom of your spine. And as you exhale, you breathe out, going up through your spine. You breathe in golden light coming in down through your spine, and golden light coming up out through from the bottom to the top of your spine as you exhale. And that breath and conscious awareness of your spine begins to open up and balance the pathways in the whole chakra system and make your body able to move. And it's just all hand in hand, right? It all goes together.
Right. And so thinking about that, or kind of making a distinction here between finding oneself in different postures to open the body and this meditative aspect of yoga. So there is meditative movement and moving with the breath and what Hatha yoga offers us. But I think there's, as I'm sure you guys are aware, there's lots of texts that describe what yoga is and what yoga is for and how to do it, et cetera. And there's one that is it's highly philosophical, and it talks about the renunciation of oneself with the greater self, which would be what's called, I believe it's called the Song of God. It's called the Bhagavad Gita. It's one of the most famous religious spiritual texts ever. And everybody in India will know exactly what this is. It'd be like the Christian Bible in the US and in Europe. And this is an absolute masterpiece of describing this idea of God realization. So I'd encourage anybody to check out the Bhagavad Gita if you want. But there's that. And then there's this, like, there's the Hatha yoga, everything we've talked about. And then there's what's disclosed in this highly revered yogic text called Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. A lot of the like monastic, hardcore, fully devoted yogis, they study a translation by this guy named the sage Vyasa. Of the Patanjali Yoga Sutras. And what Patanjali Yoga Sutras does is it lays out 8 steps to achieve samadhi, which is meditative absorption in the infinite, right? Mark, Michael, you talked about becoming one with the universe, right? And it's like, why would anybody want to do this? Is because there is no suffering there. You pretty much, it's kind of like you leave the world in a way. It's like being in deep sleep. And in this state, you can find deep contemplation and find great wisdom on certain matters because you have left the distractions of the mind and the body and everything around you. And so the fourth step of these 8 steps is called asana, which means posture. And what Patanjali teaches is that the yogi should find a firm, comfortable meditative seat. And typically we think of this as a posture called Padmasana, the lotus posture with the legs crossed, or Siddhasana, a little bit easier version of the lotus posture. And so really Patanjali, considered an authority on this, taught that you don't need to get hung up in asana, right? Depending on how far you want to go down the spiritual path, how much liberation you want to achieve. And so I think the interesting thing about comparing the classical yogic texts that say what yoga is and what we as Americans have experienced as yoga in the West is that in the West, we are very attached to asana. We're very attached to the body, the physical body aspect of this. And the thing is, if you do all of that, the physical, everything we talked about, the breath with the physical postures and movement, you unlock the body. And so your body becomes very comfortable naturally. The more flexible you are, the easier it is to be more comfortable. And so that's necessary in order to be able to achieve a firm meditative posture that you can hold for hours and hours. And so I would just say, this is a little bit advanced, but like to really nail it here with, is that it's easy to get hung up on asana. It's easy to get hung up on getting worshiping the physical body in terms of, you're not going to reach ultimate spiritual liberation through vinyasa yoga. It's not going to happen. You cannot have the physical side without the philosophical mental side. It's impossible. The mind is actually a higher order of existence, if you will, than the physical body. However, after asana, after one has achieved a relaxed body, right, and a body that allows them to be physically comfortable sitting down for long periods of time, they are ready to proceed down the path and the 8 limbs of yoga to achieve deep meditative absorption and liberation. And so what comes after that step is pranayama, which is mastering the breath, which you talked about, Anya, and where you now become conscious of your energy body. You become conscious of the energy and prana flowing up and down your spine. But even that must be let go of in order to find deeper concentration, to go deeper. The energy body, this is my opinion, and perhaps we will differ here, but the energy body must be let go of too. Deeper still is beyond form, beyond any of that. Is that deep meditative absorption. So I just wanted to share that there is what we know in the West is it does not coincide with what the ancient teachings of yoga say in the East. And I think the Buddhists, you don't see them do, I don't think, you guys might be more educated on this, Michael and Anya, but you don't see the Buddhists really get too into hatha yoga. That's more typically like a Hindu Indian thing. And the Buddhists are more into, they have the tantric things, like the different activities they'll do physically, but they're more along the path of going into deep, deep meditation. For instance, these people will go into deep meditation for months, and they'll sit down in a meditative posture, and they'll come out of meditation once a week to eat and use the restroom and drink. And yeah. This is real. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
It's nuts.
It's amazing. Yeah.
That's amazing. It's like they've achieved something. We're out of time. And it's been fascinating. I've just enjoyed hearing your perspectives on this. I think it's going to be helpful for a lot of people to look at yoga beyond just the poses and and the physical part of it. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. Just remember, if you have any comments or questions about the show and you weren't with us live, you can send them in anytime. And that email address is in the show description. Please feel free to pop that in there at any time. You've been watching the Sedona Soul Sister Show. If you'd like more information about us or our services, please visit our website at SedonaSoulSisters.com. And tune in next Friday when our topic will be the power of forgiveness. And in the meantime, we hope you have an enlightening week. Thank you for listening to the Sedona Soul Sisters Show. If you'd like more information about the Sedona Soul Sisters and their services, visit their website at SedonaSoulSisters.com. Subscribe to our show here so you don't miss a thing. All of us at Sedona Soul Sisters hope you have an enlightening week. We'll be right back.